Welcome to the BioBalance Health Podcast. I'm Dr. Kathy Maupin, and Brett Newcomb is here with us again today to discuss intimacy, the dance of intimacy, and how flirting has a role in that.
Yeah, we're going to talk about it, and it may actually lead into a second podcast when we focus more on intimacy. Today we want to talk about flirting as a subset of intimacy. And in order to do that, I'd kind of like to set the frame, if you would indulge me for a couple minutes.
Please.
You and I have been having conversations about bioidentical hormones and how they restore sexual awareness, sexual energy, overall good feeling within the body that people at a certain place in life have begun to lose. And that loss has resulted in a negative impact in many of their relationships. And so part of our conversations have been around the idea that if you restore the physical balance with the bioidentical hormones and those energies come back, my contention is that you still need to bring consciousness, understanding, and effort to the relationship. That it doesn't, for most people, and you've said for some people it does, but for most people, it doesn't just reestablish itself because the hormones are reestablished. And so the way I understand that is through what we call the dance of intimacy. And I define intimacy when I work in classes, when I teach, and when I work with clients. I define intimacy as when you have a relationship with somebody where you decide to take off more of your masks that you wear, and that you decide to take them off because you trust in this relationship that the other person won't hurt you with what you allow them to see or to know about what you're like behind the mask. And that's a huge gamble for all of us. We are very invested in keeping ourselves safe. And so we create these masks that are role identifiers in different contexts in our life. And so we have different intimacies and we have different levels of intimacy. And some of all of that, how we decide which intimacy we have or which level of intimacy we're on, is identified by what we call flirting behaviors. So I thought today we would discuss some of those.
In my world, most patients have come back or come in initially and said, my sex life, my relationship is really bad, and my husband or my wife wants to have this fixed. And they do think that the magic pellet put in their hip will fix the relationship that has been damaged by the lack of having intimate conversations and having lack of having sexual interest or sex at all.
We find that in therapy all the time. People come in and say, can't you just give me a pill for this? You know, why do I have to do this work? Why do I have to talk about it? Especially men don't want to talk about those things, whatever those things might be. But what I have found in my experience and anecdotally from the experience of my clients is that the pill is not enough. Whether we're talking about depression, whether we're talking about attention deficit disorder, whether we're talking about bipolar disorder, whatever it may be, the medicine can help regulate the system, but you still have to drive. And so that means you have to learn the tools or the steps, if you will, of the dance.
Or relearn them, because most of the time you've forgotten the steps because you haven't even been interested in dancing.
Well, they've atrophied. You know, use it or lose it. And so if you have lost it, you have to get it back.
But oftentimes we learn about flirting as children. We learn to flirt with our opposite sex parent, you know, like bat our eyes or to get whatever we want, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
It's still a matter of finding, using flirting to determine who is a good candidate to be your partner for life, especially. And then also within the relationship. And I think most of us know a lot less about what flirting is like within a relationship. Than we do about considering flirting outside of a relationship when we're trying to find our mate.
Because we've thought about it more. When you're young and you're dating and you're trying to figure out who am I and what group do I fit with and which people can I attract to me or attract myself to so they will accept me, you think about the moves that you make, the way that you look, the way that you wear your hair. I mean, even I used to teach junior high school. And kids would sit in junior high school, it's about the time they start doing it, and they practice signing their name with flourishes and make a sort of a symbolic scrawl that becomes their mark. And they spend a lot of time writing that stuff down and coming up with a design. So we think about those things in a very conscious way when we're younger and when we're first single and on the market. And so we go to the market to go shopping. We're very conscious of the way things look and the way things work and move and so on. once we've made our purchase, once we've gotten the relationship, yeah. then we don't think about it so much anymore. We get busy living our lives. And so the energy that was once in those queuing behaviors may dissipate. And so,
and that's all very natural. That's a natural progression.
So you may need to develop new behaviors that keep some energy in the relationship as you both mm-hmm. grow. Or if you've lost all of that and now the energy is coming back because of the bioidenticals, mm-hmm. then you may have to learn how to re-signal and re-cue. So that's what we call the dance of intimacy. And a subset of that are flirting behaviors. And flirting behaviors happen within a context. And I may signal to you, if we're first starting, and whether we're 50 and single and out there, or whether we're 18 or 15 mm-hmm. and single and out there, there are things that we do to try to get somebody's attention. And I often make the analogy that it's like a radio station. I am a radio station. I am broadcasting on a frequency. I have to go out in the community and find out if anybody is receiving on that channel.
I think
channel.
It's like radar.
Yeah.
You're bouncing it off to see if
analogy.
It comes back.
Yes.
Basically, that's what flirting behavior is prior to marriage. Within marriage, it's a whole lot more complex.
Mm-hmm.
But that relationship of, here, I'm going to flirt with this guy and see if he has any response. Like the... I was talking to you about the movie In the Line of Fire, where mm-hmm. Clint Eastwood's sitting on the steps of the Lincoln Memorial with Rene Russo, who's a Secret Service agent. And she ends her conversation and starts to walk away. And they'd had a few little flirting discussions within the conversation. But the most impressive thing to me is when she walks down the steps and Clint Eastwood's eating an ice cream cone going, turn around. As she turns around, she's interested. And she walks down to the bottom of the steps and she turns around, looks at him, smiles. He's still staring at her. So she gets the radar bounce back to him.
Mm-hmm. It's like that song about looking back to see if you were looking back at me.
Right.
You know, and so we are signaling each other.
So that's really our best definition of, you know, of what this is,
which
but it's much more complex.
It's a good example. It's much more complex because the signaling occurs on multiple levels. I mean, it can be a look. It can be a glance. It can be a body posture. It can be a laugh. I mean, it can be so many things, and several of those things can be happening at the same time. I mean, one of the art forms for women is to make their men think that they're clever and funny and amusing and diverting and mm-hmm. so on. And so you watch young girls practice looking at somebody and laughing and nodding attentive. And, you know, their minds are a million miles away. They're thinking, I wonder if I can get those new shoes up at Kohl's. And but the guy doesn't know. He thinks, you know, she thinks I'm impressive. Mm-hmm. And we do similar things. We, you know, when we talk to you or pay attention to you, and whether it is, you know, we're in the role of the gentleman and we're trying to open the door for you or mm-hmm. pull out the chair or give you a compliment. You know, we try those things out at home and we work on those things. it's not always a positive experience as a child. I mean, we were home yesterday. My wife has been ill for the last week. And my son came home from school yesterday, and he took one look at her, and he said, oh, you look terrible.
Yeah.
And what he
you learn never to say that.
What he was trying to say is, I care about you. I know that you've been sick. How are you doing? You know, all of those kind of things. And we all laughed, and I said, you know, that's a pretty good bumbling start. You yeah. want to reload and come back and say it a different
yeah.
way. You know, and figure out how to communicate. But part of the dance of intimacy is to select those people with whom we're going to engage and then learn what cues or what markers they respond to.
Mm-hmm.
So we start to speak their language. And
or
that,
a secret language that you develop
yes,
between each
that
other.
You develop and that's, between the two of
and
them.
That's one of those things that no one else would really read into it. I love looking at just little snippets in movies that no one else remembers but
mm-hmm.
me.
Mm-hmm.
Like in The Untouchables.
Mm-hmm.
Where the guy played by Kevin Costner played Elliot Ness, and
yeah.
he comes home all upset, and his wife's in a robe, and she has long flowing red hair, and she's listening to him while he's telling her the horrible stuff that happened that day, and she realizes, I mean, it's apparent that she's concerned about how he feels and that he's all upset, and so her discussion with him ends with, would you like to come up and brush my hair?
Mm-hmm.
Which is meaning, you know, obviously that's their cue.
Right.
When, you know, in front of the kids or whatever, do you want to come up and brush my hair means,
mm-hmm.
let's go up to the bedroom and I'll make you feel better.
Mm-hmm. And so, that's an excellent example, and that's exactly the kind of thing that we're talking about. And couples always develop those kinds of messages. And sometimes they're specific verbal statements, but sometimes they're nonverbal statements. It's a wink or blow a kiss or give an arch look or raise mm-hmm. your eyebrows or a touch. I mean, touch is incredibly powerful as a communicator of okayness, of affection, of reassurance, of desire. And we can do those things in a crowd in the same way that we can do them privately because they are a private language.
Mm-hmm.
Now, part of the art form is to learn to do it in a way that doesn't call other people's attention to it.
And not be speaking Russian while your partner's speaking Spanish.
Exactly. Yeah.
So, I mean, that's always, you know, conflicts in the, you kind of get through those conflicts at the beginning of a relationship, but that's the same thing that my patients tell me when they're trying to reconnect with their husbands mm-hmm. or the gentlemen tell me that they're trying to reconnect with their wives that, you know, I can't remember, you know, what we used to do. She's not responding back or he's not responding back because we haven't done this in so long.
Right.
So we're really trying to get
it
back.
So then the challenge there in therapy would be to say, what are you willing to talk about? Are you willing to go in and sit down and say, I feel as if I'm signaling you in ways that used to work and you're not noticing or not responding. And so how do I understand that? Is it that you're not noticing? Are you preoccupied? Are you busy? Have you moved beyond that? Does that not work for you anymore? If it doesn't, you know, I used to think it was cute when you called me babe. But mm-hmm. now I'm 52 years old and babe doesn't apply and I hate it when you do that. Well, I didn't know. You never told me. You know,
yeah.
So what could I call you that you would think is cute?
When they wince and stare at you with a terrible stare when you say babe, that's probably the sign.
Well, it would be a good indicator if you were watching to see.
But
that's the problem. That's the dance. And like you said, one speaking Russian, one speaking Spanish. So the challenge then is to say, can we find a common language to talk about this issue? Because this issue matters because you matter. And you matter to me. And so it matters to me that I know that when I need you, I can get your attention. That when mm-hmm. I want you, I can get your attention. And that most of the time, because you love me, you'll respond and flip it around. It matters that you know how to get my attention without it being a fight, without it being a crisis. How can you let me know to just stop being busy, to stop being caught up in 1,000 things in my day mm-hmm. and pay attention to you? And when I do marriage counseling, I work on cognitively, deliberately, consciously trying to create moments where that invitation can occur. Quiet time, still time. You know, teach the children when the bedroom door is closed, you can't come in. It's private time. Or even tell them, mom and dad have from 7 to 7:15 is private time. Don't, you know, unless the house is on fire.
That's a man talking.
Or somebody's
7 to
projectile.
7:15, a woman would say 7 to 10.
7 to 10, yeah. Yeah, but somebody's got to get the kids to bed.
Yeah, I really, you know. Yeah, I know that. I'm just.
We only need 15 minutes, but it all works.
Yeah, and that's
but then in those 15 minutes or 10 minutes, you go in and you stop having distractor behaviors and conversations and you pay attention to one another. You try to just get in the same space. And it doesn't have to be about sex. It has to be about intimacy. Mm-hmm. Can we match breathing rhythms? Can we be still in the same place together and allow ourselves to start to see and to experience one another? And then we find where the energy is, where the focus is. And there, and in that context is also flirting behaviors. How do I look at you in a way where there's whatever you're wanting to see, a gleam in my eye that says, oh, he thinks mm-hmm. I'm attractive, mm-hmm. or a warmth in my eye that says, oh, he loves me, I'm safe with him, so that it's not a 1,000-yard stare, it's not that silent, angry distance, it's not that preoccupied myopia. You know, I'm so focused on trying to get the bills paid before the football game starts, and you want to stop and have an intimate moment. Don't you understand that I'm bit? You know?
Mm-hmm.
And couples who've been together for many years get in those rhythms, and often, they've willingly chosen that. Maybe we've chosen to have three or four or five kids, and those kids make demands on our time, and those kids squeeze our private moments down to just nuggets sometimes because of their very existence. But we've both chosen that, and so we should both learn to walk around it and do most of the time. But sometimes we have to come first. And it's just like the old airline thing, you know, when the oxygen mask comes down. If we don't take care of the core relationship, yeah, then our children are going to be damaged. Mm-hmm. So there are times when it is our turn, and our children need to learn that. This is mom's turn or dad's turn or their turn, and you need to go and wait. And so this is not an immediate crisis, and we have to teach them what constitutes a kick the door open, the house is on fire kind of crisis. Otherwise, no matter how desperately you need to know if you can go over to Joey's and play, you have to wait.
I had a girlfriend whose parents, she had six brothers and sisters. So she was she was right in the middle. And her parents said, on Sunday after church and after lunch, between 1 and 5, we're in our bedroom. We lock the door. You are not to come in unless someone's bleeding.
Right.
That's it.
And that's exactly what I'm talking about. That's the kind of core nurturing strategy that successful couples have got to develop. And if you don't have six kids, you still need some of them because you have careers or you have interest or you have commitments that have their own time flow. And so sometimes it is a requirement that you pay attention to other things. But you still need to track and work on the intimacy factor. And one of the ways that you can maintain that, even while you're busy, is with flirting behaviors. If I'm busy on the phone with somebody else, or I'm busy trying to take care of some paperwork, I can still flirt with you to let you know I know you're there. I know that we are connecting and that we're going to connect more, but just not at this moment. And if you understand and are speaking the same language, when you see those cueings, you're reassured and you're okay. And we've bought some time to finish whatever it is we're trying to finish.
A lot of my patients have directed their sexual energy elsewhere. Yeah. And so have their spouses, because they've been so long in a dry spell that to cope, they've jumped into some other activity, whether it be work or
okay, I'm glad you said it, because when you first say that, people tend to think, oh, you mean you're having an affair.
Oh, that's not what I, no, and, I,
no, I
didn't
know.
Mean
what
that.
You, what they do is they take that creative energy. You know, the old Freudian analysis or theory is that sexual energy has to be, it is essentially or fundamentally creative energy. And so if the sexual behavior is not acceptable or appropriate, you know, then I'm not allowed that outlet. For whatever reason, then I have to channel that energy into some other creative outlet. And so I may do toll painting or macrame, or I may write a symphony or an aria, or write a book, or remodel the bathroom, or you know, start a business. We invest ourselves and pour energy into creating something, doing something, and that energy is sexual. And so when you say sometimes couples redirect that energy, especially if their partner is not available to receive it or share it, then that is what I really think most of the time is happening. Sometimes they redirect it to another party for specific sexual release. But very, very often, more often, I think, they redirect it into a commitment in some kind of aspect of life.
So they become more productive while their partners are not interested in them. And then
the partner comes back and says, here I am.
Here I am, and then they're all committed.
Yeah.
And so then it's hard to reenter, even if you have the desire, it's hard to reenter the relationship and give it the time it deserves.
So then we're back to when you've done your magic with the bioidentical hormones, then somebody has to help the couple work on the consciousness in their relationship and the deliberateness in their relationship. And then that gets back to communication skills and cueing. And flirting behaviors are one example, and they can be positive or negative. They can be positively framing, you know, invitations, come and play with me, or they can be negative. I can be flirting with someone else, with the neighbor, so that I make you mad, or that I make you jealous, or that I wound you in some way because I'm mad at you, but without having to directly come to you and say, I'm mad at you, and so now I want to hurt you. And if you accuse me of it, I'll deny it and say, you're, you know, way out of line. How dare you say that? We're just friends. You're so, you know, self-absorbed, whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
And I may or may not know.
It's a backdoor way of fighting.
Yes, it is.
And so you can take this really positive thing and turn it around.
So it's like the old gun argument. A gun is just a tool. And it depends on how it is used, for what purpose, and by whom. Flirting in a relationship is a tool of communication and of intimacy, and it depends on how we use it, the direction that we point the gun, the target of that, and the efficiency of our aim. Mm-hmm. So the dance of intimacy involves acquiring and using these various tools one way or another. And okay. So we're running out of time today, yeah. But I would like to continue this conversation in another podcast. And in that conversation, what I'd like to talk about is sort of role and gender perceptions of sex, you know, how men and women define sex and intimacy mm-hmm. experientially, what that means to them.
And that's very important, because I'm not sure that we know the other side's story.
Yeah.
We don't talk. That's the one thing my patients won't do. They won't go talk to their spouse.
Exactly.
They expect things to just be known, or to someone to read their mind.
Okay.
Or each other's mind.
Yes.
So yeah. we need to talk about
that. If you love me, you know.
Yeah. If you have any questions or comments about today's podcast, please email us at podcast@biobalancehealth.com. And if you'd like to know more about BioBalance and bioidentical hormone pellet therapy, or the other services we offer at BioBalance Health, visit biobalancehealth.com. Thanks for listening. I'm Dr. Kathy Maupin.